Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
Well, Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome back to Jessica.
All right. Happy New Year!
You always come in and say Happy Monday, and you kind of you went off that today and said Happy New Year. It's the first time we're able to see you this New Year.
I did, but the funny thing is I came upstairs first, so to that group I said Happy Monday like I normally did. And then I said, no, wait, Happy New Year. Because you can say Happy Monday every Monday, but you can't say Happy New Year every Monday. And this, it just feels appropriate. Well, so we hope you all had a great time ringing it in, and here we go.
We are back, yes. So Happy Monday, Happy New Year. Very busy Monday as we settle into 1208 on WTMJ.
It's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
The deposed leader of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife just made their first court appearance in New York City. The U.S. captured them over the weekend during a surprise attack. The couple is accused of conspiring with violent, dangerous drug traffickers for the last 25 years. So picture this. Remember, there are no recordings in federal court. The judge just now asked Maduro to identify himself. Maduro, in shackles and wearing orange jail shoes, said, "I am the president of Venezuela. I was captured at my home." The judge then told Maduro he has a right to an attorney at no cost if he can't afford one, and that he could be released before trial unless there's a reason not to do that. Maduro said he did not know that ahead of time, but does now. Maduro also said he is innocent. Both entered not guilty pleas and are not seeking bail. Coming up in our next hour, we'll talk with the CBS legal analyst, Thane Rosenbaum. What legal authority did the U.S. have to capture Maduro? How unusual is this? Could other countries do the same thing to us? And what's next? We'll discuss.
Well, the regular season is over for the Packers. A trip to Chicago to face the Bears in the opening round of the playoffs on the schedule for Saturday night. Packers enter the postseason having lost 4 straight games, including Sunday's 16-3 loss to the Vikings, in which Matt LaFleur chose to rest most key players, including Jordan Love.
We had a pretty good week of practice, I felt like, this last week for the guys that we were trying to rest. They did get a lot of reps. We won a lot of good on good, and our one offense versus our one defense. And so I think we're physically in a better place.
Well, the Bears played to win on Sunday against the Lions. They came up short, however. Detroit kicked a field goal as time expired to win it. So Chicago enters the postseason having lost back-to-back games. Teams split the regular season series with both games coming down to the wire. Saturday's game kicks off at 7 o'clock. It's Amazon Prime, but it will be available on your normal stations here locally. I think Fox is picking it up locally. That's an NFL rule. So if you live in an NFL market, and the Packers are one of the only teams that have two home markets, Green Bay and Milwaukee, you get the game for no worry, right? You don't have to worry about having a paid subscription to anything to be able to watch it here.
When I realized what exactly was happening coming out for the wild card game, I thought the Packers and the Bears, man, doesn't it feel like this will be the third time in like the last month?
Yeah,
and indeed it is.
Right. Yeah, no.
Oh, man.
Yeah, very concentrated schedule with them appearing twice in 3 weeks.
Makes it fun, though, that rivalry. Well, it just got a lot cheaper and easier to lose weight. The first GLP-1 weight loss pill hit the market today.
Novo Nordisk is rolling out an oral form of Wegovy. The cash price ranges from $149 a month to $299, depending on the dose. That compares to about $1,000 or more a month for injectable versions of Wegovy and chief rival Eli Lilly's version Zepbound. Patients with insurance coverage will pay as little as $25 for the pill, compared to the current $300 to $500. The FDA approved the Novo Nordisk oral drug last month. No word on whether it'll clear Eli Lilly's later this year. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
1212 on WTMJ, our weekly check-in with MMAC Senior Advisor Tim Sheehy on some breaking news here in the city of Milwaukee with Bucks President Peter Fagan announcing he'll be stepping away from his presidential duties. No specific timeline. It does appear as if he'll transition out sometime around the end of the season, and a transition plan is in place. Peter's impact on the Bucks and the city of Milwaukee over the last decade, profound. We'll talk to Tim Sheehy about what a loss this is locally and for the team. We'll do it after this on WTMJ. 12:15 on a Monday. Always a good time to check in with our friend Tim Sheehy, senior advisor to the MMAC. We say Happy New Year to our good friend. Hi, Tim.
Happy New Year.
Good. Happy New Year to you both.
Yeah, thanks. So some breaking news here today, Tim, with Milwaukee Bucks president Peter Fagan announcing he'll transition away from his role after leading a renaissance of the organization. He kind of came with the new ownership in 2014. He was originally part of the search committee looking for the new president, and in time decided, well, he was the best option. He went to ownership with it, and he was hired, cementing his place here as the Bucks transitioned into this new phase under new ownership. What is the impact of the loss here, not only for the Milwaukee Bucks, but the greater community? It seemed like Peter had his hands in a lot of things happening in downtown Milwaukee.
He did. I've known Peter since he first came to Milwaukee. Worked very closely with him as the plans were developing for the new arena. Watched him kind of get his feet wet with the legislature. He's done a great job not only helping to run the team, but also helping the team connect with the community. Peter had a ton of energy, a ton of passion, and I think he was a really good leader. He also, I think, had the added challenge of working with multiple owners. You know, this was not a single owner organization. So Peter had to work his magic, if you will, by keeping multiple owners happy and on point. And I think he did a fantastic job for that, a job doing that. And I wish him all the best in his next step.
Tim, how important is the next person who comes in and that choice? I know a lot of people will not necessarily know his name unless they are very in-depth with everything that's happening in the sports world. But Josh Glessing, he's a Wisconsin native, has two kids. He was named to the Sports Business Journal's 40 Under 40 class of 2024. I know you were a 40 Under 40 at one time, too. How important is this pick?
Well, it's important in kind of knowing, you know, Peter and the Bucks. I'm sure this is something they thought through very well. He sounds like he's got a great background, and in a very positive way, he's got some really big shoes to fill because Peter was not from Milwaukee. He didn't have a lot of connections here, and if you look at him now, he really worked himself into the fabric of the community. So, I think the Bucks will have thought this decision through in a very meaningful way.
Be very curious to see what direction this takes for the Milwaukee Bucks and their organization. I was interested to check in with you, Tim, on things happening in Milwaukee, but as we look forward now here in 2026, boy, it's hard to ignore the data center boom happening here in the state of Wisconsin, construction underway in a couple of different sites, big business, big companies involved. How is this data center development going to play out in 2026, transitioning into 27?
Yeah, I think 26 will be a year of some proof points. You know, we've heard a lot of discussion about water usage, energy usage, tax revenue that's going to be derived. And we'll start to see some of that come to fruition, if you will, in 26, because we'll have some data centers up and operating. We're going to see a big increase in the number of construction workers north of 4,000. And then I think the other part of the story for 26 are the companies in Wisconsin that are in the data center business that we don't really think about. Companies like Trane, Modine, Global Power Systems, Evans Transportation, Generac. These are all companies that have a tremendous stake in the growth of the data center business, not only in Wisconsin, but nationwide. So again, I think we're going to see some proof points and we're going to see some economic uplift in Wisconsin from the data centers.
What happens to the economy is always a concern, and it's a big concern right now. As we look at 2026 and going into this year, the economy will continue to be a top storyline in Wisconsin. Where do you think the economy is headed in our state?
Yeah, I think there are four things we could look at in Wisconsin's economy. The first one everybody, you know, would want to focus on is wage growth. And I think we can see continued wage growth in the private sector above inflation. The state already has kind of a baked-in increase in the budget that passed for state employees. You look at the manufacturing sector, which is still Wisconsin's economic fastball, and I think the advent of artificial intelligence and reshoring and what we talked about in terms of data centers will bode well for the manufacturing economy. Agriculture, which is a big part of Wisconsin's economy, again, I think this is going to be another year of navigating global trade trends. And then the last one, which we talked about a little bit of icing on the cake, is just the growth of the data center business. So I think those 4 points will drive Wisconsin's economy positively in 26.
Another big story here for 2026, midterm elections, and the governor race, a bit of a toss-up following incumbent Tony Evers' decision to not seek a third term. Boy, they're really lining up here on the Democratic side, Tim, with 9 names officially in the mix, much smaller on the Republican side, but names you know with Tom Tiffany and Josh Showman. How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think in the governor's race, it's 9-2 right now. I think there are probably 6 or 7 viable candidates on the Democratic side, and on the Republican side, probably 1 viable. Tiffany is the one likely to get through. And as most races, governor's races go in Wisconsin recently, I would call that one a toss-up. The Senate, for those who are not familiar with the Wisconsin State Senate, half the Senate's up every 4 years. So there's roughly 17 seats up. Republicans hold an 18-15 majority right now, so Democrats will have to flip 2 Republican seats. But this is the first time that the Senate is running under the new districts. So I think if we're going to see one of the 2 houses flip from Republican to Democrat, it might be the Senate. The Assembly, everybody's up. Republicans hold a 55-45 edge there, so Democrats would have to flip 5 seats. And the Republicans have held the Assembly almost continuously since 1995, with the exception of, 09 and 10. So I would assume the Assembly is going to stay Republican. So, again, toss up in the governor's race. Maybe the Senate flips Democrat and the Republicans hold the Assembly. That's how I would categorize it going into 26.
And what about the state of Wisconsin as a whole, as far as the people and the groups that make it up? What do you think as far as the demographics now that we're in 2026?
Yeah, boy, that's a great question, and I think maybe the most important of all. This is, one of the 3 years they call peak 65, where you have the most people turning 65. So if my numbers are right, in 2026, across the country, every day, 11,200 people are going to turn 65. So that's almost 4.1 million people a year. And that's very true for Wisconsin. Between 2026 and 2030, we're going to see our state population over the age of 65 grow to 30% of the entire state population. So as we look at the economy, as we look at elections, as we look at our sports teams, you have fewer people moving into the workforce and more people moving out. So it's going to put a real strain, I think, on Wisconsin's ability to grow as more people move out of the workforce and fewer people move in.
One of the major sporting events to begin the calendar year, Bears and Packers. Boy, you can't draw it up much better than that, Tim, to get the playoffs rolling here for Green Bay against their division rival. Always fun to talk sports with you. You're such a good prognosticator. Tim's crystal ball says what for Saturday night?
My crystal ball says that the Packers sneak by the Bears. But, I think as we look ahead, and just to quickly handicap the Wisconsin sports teams, I can do it in one word. The Bucks 26 is really going to be based on Giannis. The Packers finish this season and next season really based on health. The Brewers, can they take the next step? And the Badgers, how do they win in the portal play? I mean, I think those are the one-word descriptions of, our sports teams for 26.
Well, I think that's a great prediction. You shake up that magic eight ball and you turn it over and it looks hazy, especially now as we all age, and then it says, this is hazy. That was straight on, very concise.
See,
we like it, Tim.
That's why we ask the questions, Tim.
Yeah, just don't replay this at the end of next year.
Yeah, no problem.
Save
no problem
it, Gina,
at all.
Save it.
Always good to catch up with our friend Tim Sheehy, Senior Advisor to the MMAC. Good stuff, Tim. We'll check it again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, you bet. 12:25 here on WTMJ. Yeah, what a way to ring in the new year here. Packers football against the Bears in the playoffs. Last time they did this in the playoffs, by the way, it was to go to the Super Bowl. So the stakes maybe not quite as high here, but one team gets to continue playing, one team is done. That's it, right? The stakes are big when you get to January
One
football.
One game at a time. And wow, didn't we see that last night, too, with the Steelers game
at
the very end? Woo! I don't even usually care about the other teams, but that game at the very end, that was incredible. So much enthusiasm and excitement on one side and just absolute heartbreak
yes,
on the other.
And the swings in the last minute or two. So Aaron Rodgers' season continues as well. It is 12:25 here on WTMJ, Wisconsin's Midday News Podcast, built by Sidek Unlimited. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Make that part of your New Year's plan. Bring us with you wherever you go. A lot of folks wondering what would happen to the economy after the attack in Venezuela over the weekend. It's always a thought here, right? A war breaks out or something along this line. The United States is involved. How do the markets react? And certainly today, the markets have reacted very favorably after kind of a quiet limp into the start of 2026. The Dow surging, the NASDAQ up today, S&P up as well. Short-term gains here, or is this something to look forward to long-term? Always difficult questions to answer, but we welcome in an expert, Annex Wealth Management President and CEO Dave Spano. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I always appreciate it. We were going to do a more comprehensive outlook of the economy in 2026 here with regard to rates and so on and so forth. We'll get to that, Dave. But first, your reaction to the markets and how they are reacting after the international news over the weekend.
Yeah, you can really look at what's been happening with all of the uncertainty, and it certainly felt like there were more questions than answers, but you can see a bunch of the oil-related companies are trading really well today. Chevron up nearly 6%, Halliburton up nearly 11%. So a lot of the energy-related companies are trading really well, but you have to have the questions that answered that we don't know. Who's in charge? You know, what's the legal authority? When's there going to be an election? How's it going to look going forward? And most importantly, at least in my opinion, how is China and Russia going to react to this?
Is this more of a headline risk, Dave, or a real economic threat? I mean, sometimes you have this big news and you've got the headlines and we're talking about it, and then the markets, you know, react for a couple of days and then it seems to simmer off. But in other cases, it can stick.
Yeah, it can stick. And it really is going to be about all of these questions that I kind of outlined. How do they react? Like, if China makes a big deal out of this, for example, or Russia somehow is emboldened because they went into Ukraine, now think about what China could do. Obviously, a lot of this oil, Venezuelan oil, was going to them. But more importantly, if they get emboldened and they start sniffing around Taiwan, even more than what they're doing already, and drags us into something else, that is really the bigger story. But when you think about what it looks like from 30,000 feet, a lot of this stuff, the market does generally look past headline risk and really focuses more on the true economic numbers and the growth numbers of individual companies. But this could be something that could be a story that could linger on for some time. So we're going to have to pay attention to it.
Yeah, let's talk about where we see things going here in 2026, Dave. Will Fed rate cuts further or will they stop? We've had conflicting signals on inflation and employment so far. Well, at the end of 2025 anyway.
Yeah, that's for sure. You think about some tough jobs, and one of those has to be a Federal Reserve governor because they're looking at the data again in the rearview mirror. And for a while, it was just foggy back there. They didn't even have numbers to look at. So they're trying to make a decision on their two main jobs. Their two main jobs are to try to control inflation and make sure that unemployment is that we're all fully employed. And both of those right now are challenging for the Federal Reserve. So we'll start with the first part, which is the jobs report. We're going to get some more information this week. But the jobs in this country have been under pressure. Unemployment rates have been going up slightly. And that is a number of reasons, which are really macro reasons. You talk about a lack of immigration, for example, or even AI. Will that actually take some percentage of the jobs? Both of those will put pressure on the jobs number. And the second part is inflation. And people forget, guys, a lot of times they look at inflation and go, well, hold on a second, prices aren't going down. There is a difference between prices and inflation. Inflation is the rate of change. So even if inflation has come down from where it was 8, 9% down to 2%, that just means that prices are only going up 2%. So they're not going to go back to where they were in most cases. That's the price issue. And so what the conversation that we will hear throughout the year is probably away from inflation and more towards the term affordability, and that will be probably an economic conversation that will take us right into the midterm elections.
We've heard so much about affordability, and rightfully so, because you have a lot of families who are struggling right now. On the other hand, you have a lot of people who are invested, and very recently we've seen the markets, they just keep hitting these highs. Dave, do you think that the markets are overvalued right now, or do you think they're fairly priced?
Yeah, that's a tough question. So when we talk about markets, you're really talking about, in general, for the most part, the S&P 500. Now, that's 500 companies. You have to remember that the Mag 7, the Magnificent 7, the big companies represent almost a third of the capitalization of those. And so when you look at those seven, how are they reacting? What are they doing? And those are really the big companies that you know about, NVIDIA, Google, Amazon, and the like. Is it broadening out to start to include the other 493? And if that happens, that is a healthier market than just the big seven. So will we see that a broadening out across the S&P 500? But again, that needs a little color as well, because we talked about people struggling, yet the market's going up. There is a difference between the market, what the market is doing, and the general economy. We've spent a lot of time talking about what's called a K-shaped economy, where if you think about the letter K, you've got one of the parts of the K going down and the other part going up. And what you're seeing is a lot of the spending is happening from the people who are in better economic shape. They're doing the spending, where about half of America, that's unfortunately the lower part of the K, and they're not participating as much. So we have to bifurcate the difference between what is a general economy and a general stock market to really the reality of both of those.
You know, and both sides of the K probably look at this, Dave, though, and have kind of a sour outlook. The consumer sentiment seems to be down, but spending is still occurring. So where is that disconnect?
Yeah, sometimes you have to look at what people are saying, what they're really doing. And so the top part of that K, they may say that their sentiment is down, or worse, that's what's being reported to us through outlets, but they're really going out and spending. So look at really what they're doing and not what they're saying. You can see companies like Delta Airlines, for example, up 5% today. Southwest Airlines getting back above $40 a share. So people are spending. They're going out. You can see what's happening. I'm sure you guys were out over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and people are out and about and spending. So there is that bifurcation that's happening. And so, again, you have to take some of this with a grain of salt, because some of it is not actuality. We look at what is real, and that's when we look at the S&P 500, and you say, well, what is real? If you think about NVIDIA and you think it's expensive or not, you look at what they're doing and the amount of their earnings and their backlog of sales is years out, years. And so those companies are going to continue to perform as long as they sell more stuff and report a profit out of that.
Dave, I was thinking about you during our last half hour when we were discussing with Tim Sheehy, senior advisor to the MMAC, because we're talking about, for a moment, peak 65, this historic surge of Americans turning 65. It's happening across the country, but certainly here in Wisconsin right now. And as I was thinking about the numbers of people who are doing that, I started to think ahead to your interview, because that is a significant retirement income challenge. Do you have any advice, general advice, of course, that you could give all of these people who are looking at turning 65?
Yeah, well, you know, Tim Sheehy obviously went through it himself, right? Moved away from the MMAC to his own retirement. So he's lived it. So that's been a great person to ask. But there is the silver tsunami that is happening. And that is, obviously, we've talked about the baby boom generation now for 5 decades. And they are now getting to the age where most of them are starting to transition out of the workforce and into retirement. So if anyone is going through that process right now, be it sell a business or, for example, getting ready to retire and they haven't gone through the process, there's this where you have to go through and know what you own and why you own it. I say it often, because a lot of times, even today, people have come into our offices and said, this is what I own, not sure why I have it there, not sure how much I'm paying for it. So go through and get an inventory of what you own and why you own it and how much you're paying for it. And then from there, we'll start to work forward and say, all right, why, you know, when can I retire? What's it going to look like? Am I going to be able to replace my paycheck? And then if you already are in retirement, make sure that your portfolio is aligned with the facts and circumstances as we look into the rest of 2026, because generally a midterm election year allows some volatility and therefore opportunities.
Yeah, affordability is going to be a key come election time. You get the feeling it certainly will be. Dave, do you envision that improving at all?
Affordability is, again, it's a feeling, right? And so it's very hard to determine if affordability will be part of the conversation. I think the party that can frame it better as we go into November is probably going to have the upper hand. In general, the sitting party generally does not do well in midterm elections. So we'll have to see how that conversation is improving. But GDP is expected. We're supposed to get a 5% GDP print in the first quarter of this year. That is outstanding. You put that on top of lowering interest rates by the Federal Reserve, and earnings from the S&P 500 companies are supposed to be in the double digits again now for the fourth year. That is called the wealth effect. And so when people see their 401ks go up and their portfolios go up, or perhaps even their housing prices go up, they feel better, and that is a self-perpuating process.
Always great information. Annex Wealth Management's Dave Spano. Dave, thanks for checking in. Much
thanks,
appreciated.
Dave.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy the day.
Yep, you bet. It's 12:49 on WTMJ.
Airlines are ramping up flights in the Caribbean. They're trying to get travelers home after the operation in Venezuela shut down the airspace. ABC's Sophia Flay has one man's story.
Thousands of Americans have been stranded across the Caribbean after the airspace was closed during the U.S. raid in Venezuela. Danny Cabrera was stranded in St. Croix trying to get back to Chicago to see his dying grandmother.
My sister was telling my cousin Annette, I think she's holding on for him to come home because she knows I'm coming home. And I told her yesterday, it's okay. It's okay to not wait.
He was able to get on a standby flight to see his family today.
Oh, my goodness. Thank goodness. Wow. I mean, so many stories, but that is certainly an emotional one.
Yeah, no doubt. And you think about holiday travels, right? People getting sense of warmth and sun, maybe getting out of Dodge, visiting family or extending a trip. So very popular destination, the Caribbean, around this time of year for many people in this state, for sure.
Yeah, and it's not a quick process to add brand new flights and get the planes and crews where they need to be. ABC's Gio Benitez has a look at how a couple of the biggest airlines are trying to help today.
Hundreds of flights were canceled on Saturday, and now we're talking about these airlines adding more flights to get those stranded passengers out. So American Airlines is one of the biggest carriers in the Caribbean, and they told us overnight that they've added an extra 43 flights. That's a total of 7,000 extra seats. And starting today, they're actually adding inter-island flights to San Juan, Puerto Rico for the first time in over a decade. Delta adding 2,600 extra seats as well.
My husband and I went to Cabo for just a few days. We made it a long weekend to start off the new year, and I decided I was going to try to stay away from the news, and that's very hard for me to do, so I wasn't looking at the news. And on Saturday, he basically said what was happening and that the airspace was closed and we couldn't get home. And I said, what? I said, you're kidding me. I thought he was joking around, because for a moment, I'm actually trying to, you know, just take a moment and not look at the news. So I thought he was joking. He's like, no, I'm serious. But it was not our airspace. It was the Caribbean airspace. So in Cabo, we were able to leave just fine. But we had considered going to the Caribbean, going to like a Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, sure, that sort of thing. And had we done that, I don't know if I'd be here today.
You know, a number of those communities and those countries that had flight cancellations include those under control outside of the U.S. and outside of, you know, the world of Mexico, Curaçao's, run by the Dutch, as a matter of fact. It was our honeymoon location back in the day. But many cancellations out of there, Barbados, St. Martin, St. Lucia, Antigua, really anything that is nearing South America as you get further south in the Caribbean, impacted. Flights out of Miami, over 107 cancellations there. You name it, really, if you were in that area from Miami south to South America, and even points west, as you mentioned, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, good likelihood, good chance that you were not getting on that plane, maybe for up to 24 hours or more.
Yeah, and you have some people saying, oh, well, tough place to be stuck, right? Which is true. However, you think about the cost.
It's definitely a
hassle.
All
of a sudden, yeah, and then trying to get home, and you've got commitments back home, and Yeah, so it's a hassle for a lot of people trying to get back home today.
It's hard to make that day feel like a vacation day, isn't it? I've never been stranded where we couldn't come back or had an overnight where you got, you know, plunked down somewhere, just get a hotel and you'll be fine. But I can't imagine that feels like a vacation day as you're trying to get back home.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because yesterday, I will say the flight we were trying to get on out of Kabul that we had planned on, that actually ended up getting canceled. So it was a little tricky for us to get home yesterday. However, it had nothing to do with this. It had to do with the plane itself. Mm. But that particular flight had been canceled the day before. And I could tell the people who were there the day before and their flight got canceled. And then it was delayed again and delayed again. I was looking at this one man and I felt for him. I was like, oh, he was having a rough time. And then sure enough, we decided we need to take another flight. Otherwise, I wasn't going to be back to come to work on Monday. So we quickly bought a different flight, got on that flight and got home on a different airline. But about 50 minutes later, that flight ended up being canceled. And I thought, there's a lot of people right now who are not happy.
Glad you're back. The sacrifices you make for this program, Jessica.